Have you started?
No, we just I wanted to sort of give overview.
Oh yeah, what? So I was going to introduce you.
No, that's fine. So, and then I really wanted to sort of prepare, like, handout, sort of giving you overview of Baladev and his works, but I sort of didn't have time to do that. But if you are interested in more historical and theological, good morning, details, I published my thesis last year from Oxford. This is my first book, and it's based on my DPhil thesis, which I did here with the Professor Gavin Flood. And then my thesis was mainly on this author, Baladeva Vidyabhushana, 18th century Gaudiya Vaishnava author. And then my thesis looked at the Govinda Bhashya, which was his commentary on Brahma Sutra. And one of the interest reading this current text is to compare this work with his Govinda Bhashya, because we don't know the dates of these two texts, but because of the historical evidence we have, or document evidence we have, it is likely that this Tattva Deepika was written earlier than Govinda Bhashya. So, we will see some parallel appearing in this work. So I want to compare, like, how he developed or changed his argument. Anyway, so Baladeva, who was Baladeva? What we know is that he was initially trained in Madhva Sampradaya. He's from Orissa, but he went to Mysore to be trained. He joined the monastery, Madhva Monastery, and then he was trained there. And I don't know if we have any textual evidence, but the secondary literature says that he took even sannyasa from the Madhva tradition. In any case, what we know that is that he was thoroughly trained in Madhva tradition. But then hagiography says that he went kind of digvijaya, kind of going around, sort of discussing ideas with the other pundits, and then try to convince other people. But then after he did digvijaya, he then settled in Jagannath Puri, Orissa, and then there he met the Gaudiya Vaishnava author, whose name I forgot.
Radha Damodar,
exactly. Someone called Radha Damodara, and then he studied Gaudiya Vaishnava literature with this particular person, and then there it is said he sort of embraced, or we can say converted to Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition. Now, the nature of his conversion is it's not clear. As far as we know, he hasn't taken any sort of diksha initiation from any of the Gaudiya teachers. So in some ways, technically speaking, you can say he just remained as a Madhva. But if you see his writings, I think whatever... anything I read, it's very clear his... if you, for example, see his Mangala shlokas, it's very clear that his allegiance is to Gaudiya tradition. But of course, if you know, his Madhva or Gaudiya connection is somewhat controversial, and then that's the sort of main topic of my book, if you like to get into that topic deeper. But anyway, so then after Puri, he moved to Vrindavan. And then there, he studied with this 17th century Gaudiya author called Vishwanatha Chakravarti. and at that time probably he was most prominent Gaudiya author. And then again there he studied with the Vishwanath. And then he moved to Jaipur. Well, he sort of settled in Vrindavan, but the he was sort of invited to Jaipur by the king, Jai Singh the Second, and also sort of his how do you say co-disciple? How do you say Krishna Deva Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who was also Vishwanath Chakravarti's disciple. So Krishna Deva is Baladeva's senior contemporary, and then Krishna Deva was already working for Jai Singh, and sort of Baladeva joined the court. And the nature of the relationship between this Krishna Deva and Baladeva is something we don't know much about, but they certainly know each other, and yes. But what were they doing in Jaipur? Well, they were basically they became the court pundit for Jai Singh, and because Jai Singh wanted to promote Gaudiya tradition as the state religion for his kingdom. But then to do so, he required some theological backup to explain like why Gaudiya tradition should be the sort of most prominent tradition in his country rather than other deities. And then this became like a source of controversy because we know that the this Kachavahad lineage, Kachavahad dynasty, in which Jai Singh appeared, there prior to this Gaudiya influence, they were their how do you say Ishtadevata, the family deities were Rama, so they were, and then they still claim descendants from Kusha and Lava, yeah, Kusha and Lava. They say, you know, the Hindu kings, they always kind of trace back their lineage to divine figures. So they claim this sort of descent from this Rama. That's why. So the Rama was the Ishta Devata, but then sort of Jai Singh wanted to kind of put Gaudiya worship beyond, I mean, over the Sita Rama worship, and then that was one of the controversy because then sort of this Rama cult, the Ramanandis, felt somewhat threatened in terms of the patronage. Now, maybe get into this work. This Tattva Deepika, as I wrote in the blurb for the OCHS lecture announcement, it's relatively unknown to the general Gaudiya circle. If you see Haridas Das, Gaudiya Vaishnava Abhidhan, where the list of Gaudiya Vaishnava authors as well as Gaudiya Vaishnava works are listed and then given some explanation, you don't see this listed as one of Baladeva's work. And so this this is based on the manuscript that you see here. This is just a copy. And as far as I know, there is only one copy, which is this original. And then this is, if you accept what's written there, this is Baladeva's handwriting, because at the end of this, so this is 14 folios, and at the end of this, let's see. At the end of the 14th folio, which I can show you if you like. So this is the at the end of the actually 17th for you. Anyway, it's you can see that the iti Srimad Krishna Chaitanya Deva Pada Pada Padmo Pad Padma Upajivita Vidyabhushanena Nirumita Tattva Deepika Esha Samaptim Agat. So this Tattva Deepika, this text reached the completion Agat Samaptim, reached completion. And then it is written by Vidyabhushana, so it's a Baladeva, who lives on like Upajivina, or is it Upajivina, who subsists on the lotus feet of Chaitanya Deva. So as far as, I mean, if you trust this writing, then how do you say, this is autograph, this is Baladeva's himself. And then I haven't seen any other copy, and then this manuscript original is stored in Mansingh Museum in Jaipur, and it has not been published, and actually this is not supposed to circulate, so please do not, I cannot give you a digital image, and then I can give you this for our reading, but then please do not circulate this to other people because I have certain contract with them. Yes, and then so this text, as far as I can see, I haven't read all yet. I just started reading first few folios, but the it's mainly a work of polemics. So the first he's going to reject the Buddhism. And then next is Jainism, and then there seems to be some confusion. But then I seem to get the Lokayata somehow coming in after, in the middle of refuting Jainism. So there could be some sort of confusion, just in terms of transmission of manuscript. That is to say, I mean, someone might have just swapped around, and then I'm just following the order that given by someone who took the picture of this manuscript. So there are some problems here and there, and even in this section that we're going to read today, as I was kind of going through again this morning, I already noticed some mistakes. So really, I would like you to have comments and make suggestion in terms of improving this edition, and so polemic works, and then also another in terms of content, another interest is that there seems to be some I don't know, like at least. When it comes to Jainism, at least there seems to be some misunderstanding of what Jaina tradition is, and so kind of try to understand like where he's getting this information from, and also how his understanding is different from so-called, like, let's say, like a standard understanding of Jaina tradition. Even better, if we could trace, the source of his understanding, that's one of the interest. Right. So I don't want to keep talking about it. So is there any question in terms of?
Is there like a mantra doxography that he might be following?
That's possible. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know sort of enough of the mantra tradition to know what would have been circulated at the time.
I was thinking to check with the not with mantras, but the, you know, mantras. What was something something Sangraha. Satdarshana Sangraha. Sangraha. Yes, that's a very good point. I mean, like by 18th century, there are many sort of like a doxographical works where the author kind of refutes one school after another. And in terms of this, I think one thing he follows, one thing that reminds me of this Satdarshana Sangraha is that, you know, there Madhava let sort of, instead of just advising, refuting everyone, he just let the one school refute the other, and then the school which wins is later again superseded by yet another school, and then like that, so he put the hierarchy, and then Advaita Vedanta comes at the end and then refutes the penultimate position, right? I don't know to what extent, but then the Baladeva does something similar in a sense that the he first take on Buddhism, but then he sort of refutes some part of some doctrine of Buddhism, and then Buddhism is wrong because of this doctrine, and then he goes on to say, well, then Jainism should be okay. That's the Purvapaksha's point, because Jainism doesn't have that problem. But then he again says, well, but Jainism has this another problem. So he kind of goes one after another. But then, I haven't looked into doxographical work in the Madhva tradition, but it's quite possible that he may get something there. And then, of course, as I said, this polemical content has parallel in Baladeva's Govinda Bhasha in the second Adhyaya, second chapter. That's a traditionally section where other schools are refuted by the author. So obviously, a Madhva commentary is available on that section as well. So to look into that is also an option, certainly.
Anything? Is that method employed by the Satdarshana Sangraha, is where one school refutes the other and then supersedes, etc.?
Right.
Is that a standard thing, or is that, I mean, like, how does it normally play out in doxographies? Is that unique to that?
I don't know, to be honest. This is something I just... maybe, Jonathan, you might be more familiar.
I don't think it's unique. I saw this elsewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, at least I think in Watson's book, too, Self-Awareness of Itself, there is this...
I see.
This old way of...
Right.
But you also have some works that just kind of say, here's the Buddhists and here's the Jains.
There's no hierarchy.
Jain works often kind of do that and just don't do any refutation. It's just here's this idea, here's the school. And
oh, I see.
Leave it at that.
Because like you would think if the purpose of the doxography is to, you know, of certain kinds of doxography are to show a kind of hierarchy of views, that would be a fairly standard way of proceeding, that each, you know, that each school refutes and then supersedes and then in turn is defeated by another, which would be an easy way of showing hierarchy.
Yeah, it's a very intelligent way. But the I mean, like the sort of the genre he's writing this polemical tradition and doxographical and polemical tradition. Like, in what sense he's unique or not unique, it's something I need to explore further. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have this another question. This is approximately 17th century text.
Yes.
Written in Jaipur.
Yes.
Or maybe the audience there, local, the court audience, etc. But why do you think he engages or refutes Buddhism and Jainism? Because in 17th century, there's practically in Rajasthan, there was no challenge from these two traditions as compared to other, even Vaishnava traditions.
Yeah, yeah.
Or other Advaita traditions or Shaivite traditions,
exactly,
or Lingi traditions.
Yeah.
Why do you think he engages, or does he later engage with other traditions?
Yeah, of course he goes on to I think standard sort of darshana. Mimamsa, I've seen Sankhya, I think he's going to refute, and then Advaita Vedanta, he's going to refute. So these sort of major players are there. And then, of course, Jains are there. Jains are there, so the Jains are okay, I mean, to address. But then, obviously, I also wonder, like, why Buddhism? And then this is nothing more than speculation, but the one... one speculation I'm thinking about is maybe just by this time, obviously they won't have many Buddhists around, but then the existence of Buddhism they existed, and then they were very influential. That any pundit would know. So maybe just like in the Saddarshana Sangraha, the refuting Lokayata, everyone starts with Lokayata. Right, so maybe by this time, sort of Buddhist became kind of a typical kind of, oh well, yeah, of course, no one believes in Buddhism, but like we have to start there. So it's kind of like a lowest end, like in terms of perception of Buddhism in 18th century. Sort of Buddhism maybe have become kind of a lowest strata that nevertheless has to be addressed.
There's something in Andrew Nicholson's book, In Unifying Hinduism,
right,
where he says that that in Vijnana Bhikshu, when he's dealing with Buddhists, Shunyavadins, they're a kind of placeholder for Muslims.
I see.
And then he says he gives an illustration in a North Indian bhakti text where a Muslim is being referred to as a Shunyavadin.
Right. Right. And then again, in terms of Buddhism, actually, I have more difficulty with Buddhism than Jainism in terms of his refutation. We will come in the maybe second or third page. He talks about this something called Bhavana Chatushtaya. He says something like Shunya Bhavana. Samsari Bhavana, something like that, and I honestly don't have very clear idea what he's talking about. So I would be grateful that the if you see the second page, line 15, Yatcha Svalakshana Bhavana, Kshanika Bhavana, Dukkha Bhavana, Shunya Bhavana, Cha Iti Bhavana Chastushita. Bhavana Chatushtayam Pumartha Hetu Iti Matam Tadabhyasat. So he says these four elements, according to Purvapaksha, is the Pumartha, Purushartha, according to Buddhism. But then he goes on to say that's not possible because blah, blah, blah. But I don't know what this Bhavana Chatushtaya is, and I haven't looked deeply into Buddhist sources to find out what they are. One of my question is like, how is, and then I checked his Govinda Bhasha on Buddhism, but I don't think there he discusses these four elements. So I would like to see if this is actually some Buddhist position, or this is actually his misunderstanding coming from like other source, because as Rembert said, he could be following something like Madhva's work, some Madhva's doxographical works, and in there he might be just a verbatim copying, and then he might not, in other words, he might not have basing his refutation on actual Buddhist texts.
So if bhavana means like something like meditation or
something,
then it could be the four Brahma Viharas he's talking about.
Brahma Vihara.
It could be the four standard Brahma Viharas.
I see.
Metta, Karuna, and whatever the other.
Mm-hmm.
Picture. And the fourth one, I can't remember. Might be.
Sure. Yeah, but I would like to see like this particular terminology, a technical term, Bhavana Chatushta, is a commonly accepted idea in Buddhism or not, or if so, where it's come from. Okay, so maybe we can start reading the text because I'd like to go over like a fair amount, and we could discuss how we want to proceed. Remember yesterday sort of warned me that if I ask the attendants, then attendants tend to shrink. So I'm happy to do it myself, or I'm also happy that if any of you want to give
it. Any of you, I'm afraid. For us.
Give it a try. That's yeah, that's fine. So it's really like it should be sort of friendly. A place for discussion. So, anyone would like to?
I'll do the first one. Sri Govinda Deva Palara Vinde Vyo Namaha.
Okay.
Patience to the lotus feet of Sri Govinda Deva.
Exactly. Thank you. So, here it's already his acknowledgement of Govinda Deva is very clear. And then the significance of this is that the Govinda Deva is the this Murti which moved from Vrindavan to Jaipur after a long journey in order to sort of escape the attack by the at that time was massively Aurangzeb. So there was a attack in Vrindavan by the Mughal troops. And then, so in order to keep the Murtis safe, many pujaris of various tradition carried Murtis to southwest. And then many, yeah, so at least like three Gaudiya Murtis moved to Jaipur, and then they're worshipped there even now. But then Govinda Deva was the one which was first worshipped by Rupa Goswami, and then it was patronage or funded by Man Singh, who was the Jai Singh's forefather. And so the Govinda Deva signifies a sort of long-standing historical connection between Gaudiya and the Kachabaha dynasty. And then that's part of the reason why Jai Singh put Govinda Dev into the main deity. And then even now you can see that at the back of Royal Palace, Govinda Dev Ji Temple is there. So this is to acknowledge that I'm writing for Govinda Dev, but then also that means to Jai Singh II, who is hosting this image.
And in Jaipur.
In Jaipur, yeah. And then you can read the Monica Horseman's book on Govinda Dev Ji if you want to know more about this very interesting historical journey from Vrindavan to Jaipur. It took like more than 60 years.
60 years?
Yeah, so because it didn't come straight. It sort of, it just initially moved just a bit away from Vrindavan. And then again, like maybe they felt not safe enough, so they moved further, and they moved further, and then finally, Jai Singh sort of put them in the. So it's a very interesting history itself.
Did they ever go back?
No. Now in Vrindavan, you have the how do you say, like replica of the Govinda Dev Ji, but then the original one is in Jaipur. So, so this was opening, and then comes two verses of opening. So, anyone would like to, or at least read Sanskrit?
Read Sanskrit?
Yeah.
Premaspadvena nirastabhedam bhedam svarupena yadapya Chastram. Yo darshaya masa paratma tattvam sano sanaha avatat pita pitava pu purmukundaha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you very much. So maybe I give my tentative translation and then you see already my mistake. So I think it shouldn't be sano but sa and naha. So my tentative understanding is something like sa mukundaha naha avatit no avatat. So so avatat is the how do you call it, like a precative form, something like that. Like this sort of bit unique in terms of meaning, it's imperative, but then it's used in when you invoke the deities. So something like may something something. So avatar is from av to protect. So may sa mukunda, may that mukunda protect. Naha, us, that Mukunda, who is Pitabapu, who has yellow body. And I come back to this point, but then this is a very specific reference to Chaitanya. He, that Sa Mukunda, he, who, yaha darshayamasa, paratmatvam, tatvam. So that Mukunda, who darshayamasa, periphrastic, perfect, who showed that the fact that he's paraatma, he's the highest self, and then the first line is how to understand that is a little bit confusing. But the maybe yad api, maybe yad in the sense of since, I take it as a sense. Since, even though api, even though ajaslam is like always or something like that. So. So even though he's always he is, or this para tattvam, or maybe it's better the yad, understand yad in, as talking about paraatma tattvam. So even though that paraatma tattvam is constantly as ajasram, distinct vedam svarupena by nature. So what is it? What is it different? So different, maybe different from the world, different from living entity, or different from Krishna's difference from Radha, something like that. So even though that paraatma tattvam is different from everything else, but that vedam is nirasta vedam. So nirasta vedam is the again, Bahubudhi compound, that distinction is set aside. Why? Because of the premaspadatva. Because maybe that Mukunda is a premaspada, as abode of prema. So that's my tentative understanding. But at this point, if you have any comments, I'm happy to. So I guess my first question would be how to take yad, to take it as in the sense of since he showed, or yeah, but maybe to take yad as referring to para atma tattvam might be better. Yeah. So para atma tattvam, which?
Do we take? Svarupena, so would you take it with Vedam or with this Nirasta Vedam? So
I take Vedam together with Svarupena, and then Nirasta Vedam with the premise for that one.
But his real nature is to be undivided, or this matapvam, or that's what is it, non-dual in a sense, you know, his
Yeah, yeah. So I guess how to read this section depends on your, yeah, like depends how we understand the theological background of this verse. Yes, and then like where is Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta in terms of Veda and Aveda? and then that's a whole, it's a big topic.
Is it both?
It's a both.
So if it's
yeah, so Veda, Veda.
You could, no need to mean, maybe although, I mean, could be his both, is Nirasta Vedam, and it's also Vedam in its nature. He's inherently both, but I don't know what kind of,
Yeah, and then the reason, yeah, maybe this is something again to do with the. Let me get into this. Pita Bapur, so the Mukunda who has yellow body, and then this is obviously Krishna is black colored. So why do you say it's a Pita Bapur? And I didn't put it there, but the this is a very specific Gaudiya understanding that Chaitanya appeared as Krishna, but in a golden color. And for example, in the I can give you this reference if you want to know more specifically, but the for example, Jiva's Tattva Sandarbha, so Jiva Goswami's Tattva Sandarbha starts with the a citation of Bhagavata Purana 11.5.32, which is this famous Krishna Varnan Tvisha Krishnam. So that's where Jiva argues that Sangha Upa Anga Astara Parshadam Yajnaihi Sankirtana Aprayai Yajanti Smeda Saha. So wise people in the age of Kali worship Krishna by means of Sankirtana. And this is the famous Bhagavata passage where Jiva argues that that this passage predicts Chaitanya because Chaitanya spread the worship of Krishna through Sankirtana, the congregational chanting. So that's the first Mangala Shloka in Tattva Sandarbha, which is the Tattva Sandarbha itself is the beginning of this his Shak Sandarbha. So it's very important that he cites this. And then the second verse, second Mangala Shloka for the Tattva Sandarbha, then he quotes this. He gives this his own composition, which is Anta Krishnam Bahir Gauram. Krishna Chaitanyam Ashvitaha. So we take shelter in Krishna Chaitanya, who is Anta Krishnam. And then again, like how to interpret this Krishna. It can be just black, you can say he's Krishna Chaitanya, so that's a Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who is Krishna inside, and then Bahir Gauram, the Gaura, the golden outside, so dark inside, meaning like he's internally Krishna, but then his appearance is Gaura. People like Tony Stewart has extensively discussed this, that this idea of two colors becoming one in Chaitanya, and then that golden color represents Radha, and the black color represents Krishna. So this idea that Chaitanya embodies sort of combined incarnation of Radha Krishna, that's there in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and so that's a very particular doctrine of Gaudiya tradition, which is there from Jiva's time. And we do know that Baladeva read Jiva's work because Tattva Sandarbha has Baladeva's commentary, and then here, as far as I can see, it's a very clear allusion to this Gaudiya doctrine. So if you read this background altogether, then I would say this Bedam is the distinction between Radha and Krishna. And then this distinction is important because although, yes, it is the principle of Advaya, the unity is there in the Gaudiya tradition, but at the same time, the Gaudiyas are very adamant that, starting from Jiva, Gaudiyas are very adamant that that unity is not the unity in the sense of Kevala Advaitic tradition. So that's where also Baladeva, even though he's writing for Gaudiya tradition, he uses Madhva, Madhvas, you know, because Madhvas are very famous for pushing the Veda view and then attacking Advaita Aveda point view. So Baladeva uses extensively, borrows extensively Madhva's refutation of Kevala Advaita. So, and then also from Gaudiya perspective, this rasa between Radha and Krishna is most important, and in order for them to have relationship, you need to have distinction. So distinction, the Veda is the basis for the this sambandha, that relationship between one entity to another. So therefore, I sort of want to take this Vedam Svarupena. So even though as Paramatma, as a Supreme Self, his distinction from Radha is inherent, but that that distinction is set aside, and then he become one with Radha, and then appear as Chaitanya. Why? Because of love. So
so this tattva here is central, because that's mm-hmm. tattva dipika. So
right.
So what is tattva here is, and who's teaching it? So Mukunda mm-hmm. is teaching something, showing meaning teaching mm-hmm. to us, or he's teaching the truth of the Supreme Self, mm-hmm. something like that.
Yeah.
So what it is really.
Yeah.
And he's teaching it as being perpetually, yeah, Veda in a Veda, or as you want to interpret Epi. So that's a little bit the context, I guess. So that's important, because the first verse tells us, okay, what it is about, the whole work, in fact. So
Thank you. Yeah. But
should there be a double ta?
Yeah, exactly.
Is there a double
ta? Yeah. Tattva. Yeah. Tattva.
Manuscript doesn't matter.
Yeah, but the I edit and I'm putting other places tattva, and but here the Nirasta Vedam, as far as I understand, is the Bahubrihi compound. So that is adjective modifying Vedam. So that means Vedam is the main like point here, and then. So even though he is different, but then that distinction is given up. So yes, that's right. That the I mean, elsewhere he also talks about Advaya principle as well. But the here he seems to be emphasizing. So in a way, it's both there, Veda and Aveda, both there in the Gaudiya tradition. But here he seems to be emphasizing Veda. Yeah. Any other suggestion, comments, question? This verse. Oh, and then this is I didn't write, but the this is meter is Indra Vajra.
Yeah,
Indra Vajra. So maybe shall we move on to second verse? Maybe Lucien, would you like to just read the Sanskrit?
Bhakti vritin nita jaga jananam shrila twisham rupa sanatananam dhuri bhavat sattvata moja rajobhyaha sadanamo nostu padam rajobhyaha.
Yeah, and then again
the no and then astu should be astu should be avagraha, no astu. Don't trust my text. So please always look back to the manuscript. And I mean, it's not that manuscript has avagraha, but the again, the meter is Indra Vajra. So sada namo no stu padan rajebhyo. So namo no astu. So may or let there be namaha, like obeisance, and whose, our obeisance. So maybe like let us pay obeisance to the rajobhyaha, to the dust of padam, of feet of rupa sanatana. So this rupa and sanatana are the founding fathers. So first he implicitly praises Chaitanya, and then second verse is to Rupa and Sanatana, who are direct disciple of Chaitanya and sort of, you can say, founding theological fathers of Gaudiya tradition. So Baladeva now paid obeisances to Rupa and Sanatana. So let us constantly sada pay obeisances to the dust from the feet of Rupa Sanatana. And then Rupa Sanatana, who is Shri Ratvishan, like glorious, and Trish, like splendid, something like that. So glorious and splendid Rupa and Sanatana, who are Bhakti Bratto Unnita Jagat Jananam. So this is, again, Bhakti compound explaining Rupa Sanatana. Rupa Sanatana, maybe by whom? By whom the Jagat Jananam, people in the world or people of the world, are unnita, kind of uplifted. Maybe Bhakti Bratta through, and then I suppose this is the Bhakti Bratta of Rupa and Sanatana, through their, how do we translate the, like Bhakti Bratta, devotional bow? Devotional austerity, devotional practices. So so Rupa Sanatana sort of uplift the world by their practice. And then what's left is this Duri Babat Sattvatamo Rajobhyaha, and that's nicely explaining Rajobhyaha. So Rajas has it the sense of the dust, but then also has a sense of this one element in the Sankhya Triguna. So so obeisances, let us pay obeisance to the dust in which, maybe, or whose, sattva tamo rajas, in which or whose sattva, tamas, and raja, these three elements are duribhavat, kind of being like distanced, being put away. So the idea is that so worshipping the dust of feet from a saintly person, that's kind of topos. But then again, that feet is duribhavat. So it's like it sort of
dispelled.
Yeah, dispelled. Yeah. And then also, please. Please make suggestion in terms of English translation, because I'm sort of more or less just translating literally, but these, obviously, that's not always sufficient. So I like to always what did you say? Dispelled. Yeah, dispelled. Yeah. So the idea is that this body of the saintly people are sort of beyond the influence of the three gunas. Therefore,
something like Shuddha Sattva or something like that, like completely pure. And I guess in a way you can say that he's suggesting that Vipassanapana is like, I don't know, Jiva Mukta almost, kind of. Yeah. So,
Rupa Sanatana again?
Rupa Sanatana, these are the brothers and the direct disciples of Chaitanya. And basically, these are the, because Chaitanya himself didn't write, or at least didn't, we don't have access to his writings. But instead, according to hagiographies, we know that he requested his disciples to systematize and write this this Radha Krishna Bhakti, you can say. So then Rupa Sanatana are the sort of senior most disciples who, you can say, started or who wrote, who laid the theological foundations of Gaudiya tradition through their writings. And then Jiva, again, is their nephew. So Jiva, Rupa, Sanatana, they're all sort of related as a family member. And then these three sort of main founding figures in tradition, and that's why it's important. Any
so, should we have Dvisham Yutarkit as a Dvandva or?